Okay. Our next speaker is Autumn McLaughlin, and we're going to continue with the CLRDV investigating the interaction between crop age and timing of CLRDV inoculation on disease severity and yield losses.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Autumn McLaughlin, an entomology master's student at Auburn University under Dr. Alana Jacobson. Today, I'm going to give you an overview of a caged field study that was conducted last summer to improve our understanding of cottonleaf roll dwarf virus. Specifically, today, we are looking at the interaction between crop age and timing of cottonleaf roll dwarf virus on disease severity and yield loss. CLRDV was first identified in Africa in 1949 and has since been found in Argentina, Brazil, India, Thailand, and Timor-Leste. The Southeast had never dealt with a cotton virus disease in cotton up until 2016 when crop advisors noticed abnormal symptoms in cotton fields in Alabama. In 2017, Dr. Kathy Lawrence's lab identified symptoms, and they had confirmed as CLRDV in 2018 from samples in Elmore County, Alabama. In 2019, after Dr. Brown got a genome sequence, she finally confirmed that the Alabama CLRDV isolate as a new species. CLRDV is a positive single-stranded RNA polarovirus in the family Lutraviridae and has been reported as the second most damaging virus in cotton. The known vector of this virus is the cotton aphid, or Aphis gossypii. It transmits in the mode of persistent and circulative, meaning that the aphid has to feed on the plant, acquire the virus through the stylet, then through the foregut, then through the midgut, out of the midgut, and then circulate back into the salivary glands. Then it is ready to transmit. Alates, known as wing reproductives, have been reported to transmit this virus in 40 seconds and up to 12 days. The symptoms to this virus attributed to this disease are highly variable and include, but probably, you know, there's so much of a list, leaf distortion, red tinting of the leaves, greenish-blue leaf color, red veins, red petioles, red stems, upward curling, downward curling, tinting, drooping, shortening of internodes, abnormal top growth, square abortion, bowl drop, and reduced in yield. Though some plants have been tested positive and were asymptomatic. There's some data showing variation of CLRDV symptoms among cultivars, as you've seen in the earlier talk, but based on our understanding of plant viruses, we know that there are a variety of factors that can influence symptoms, being one cultivar, time of infection, plant stress, plant maturity, and abiotic factors. To begin to address questions about symptom severity and yield loss, we conducted a caged field study so that we could control the time of CLRDV infection to these plots. Our objectives of this study were to investigate the interaction between timing of CLRV virus spread and crop growth stage on symptomology and yield loss. We used a randomized complete block design with four replicates of each treatment. The treatments were as followed. Treatment 1 and treatment 2 are pretty much our controls. At treatment 1, we were looking at no aphids. We were just seeing that we can cage these plants and there will be no infestations from the outside. Treatment 2, our second control, we had a non-viriliferous population of aphids that we put in there, and this treatment was pretty much showing that we can maintain a non-viriliferous population of aphids and hopefully show that the aphid itself wasn't producing any kind of yield loss as a control. So the meat and potatoes of this experiment was really treatment 3, treatment 4, and treatment 5, and this is our viriliferous releases of aphids at week 1, week 2, and week 3. We also had 4 border rows in this trial that we cannot use in our analysis because of cage versus outside of the cage. There was a lot of difference. But we did use these rows to monitor natural infestations of virus and aphid presence. Cages were placed over the plots the day after planting in May to prevent aphid infestations, and all plots were caged for the same amount of time to reduce cage-related effects on symptom expression and yield across treatments. A U.S. CLRDV-infected cotton plant was used as our source inoculum for our aphids. Aphids were placed onto the plants 3 to 4 weeks to begin to acquire the virus and also populate so we could use them in the study. We had them in our greenhouse for on the source plant. We then took the infested source plant and a bug dorm into our cages so we weren't hopefully spreading any more disease. We make sure that we contain. So mainly what we want to look at right here is that week 1 was at the 3 to 4 true leaf stage. Week 2 release was at the 5 to 7 true leaf stage, and then week 3 was at the first pinhead square is when we did our releases. Maintenance of this trial included insecticide sprayed 2 weeks after infestations to kill off the aphids. Cages were removed 8 weeks after plant, and then plant mapping and symptom monitoring began. For data collection, we were doing repeated measurements on 10 marked plants after we had infested with aphids. We were monitoring symptoms weekly, and we were looking at presence and absence of symptoms. Plant mapping, we looked at plant height, presence or absence of the first and second position bolls. We also looked at first fruiting node and the total number of nodes. We also, with a collaborator from Dr. Lawrence's lab, with Will Gruber, he took weekly multispectral imaging to see if we could detect the virus earlier. Virus was confirmed by PCR in August, and yield was evaluated for each treatment. For the objective of this project, we wanted to know the timing of infection and its effect on yield. Here, we saw a yield response due to the timing of infection. The graph shows that week 1 release had a significant difference, a 400-pound difference, between our 2 controls, our no aphid and our non-viliferous aphid controls. And you can also see, which holds true to most pathology, you can see a numerical trend from our week 1 at our youngest stage of infection. Numerically goes up from after the plant matures and we inoculated, there was a less of an impact on yield to week 3. Very, very not significant from our controls. By looking at symptoms, further investigate differences among infected and healthy plants. So from our PCR testing, once again, we were virus testing on the 10 marked plants that we started at the first of the trial. We confirmed virus transmission, but there was not 100% infection in our treatments. So to prevent confounding results, we ended up grouping our plants from healthy or not infected in our infected treatments. So this is our infection, and then we're looking at this right now. So plants that were not infected, all grouped together, was 108 plants. Week one, we had 22 out of 40 plants be infected. Week three, 39 out of 40 plants infected. Week three was 28 out of 40. And then, once again, we're going to go back to those border rows because they were important. We did see a lot of movement of the virus and aphid presence. We had 70 to 100% natural infection on our border rows. After we took those cages off, as you can see in some of Dr. Roberts and some of Dr. Jacobson's presentations earlier, it's hard to keep these aphids out of these plots after we have removed the cages. So we did get 8 positives, but that's out of 80 plants in our controls. And we separated them for analysis. There were no differences in the number of plants with symptoms among any of our treatments. Mainly what we were seeing for symptoms were shortened internodes, tinting, drooping, the red veins, red petioles, red stems. Also, with our weekly spectral imaging, we did not see any significant differences in NDVI values or green seeker values, but there is going to be further analysis on that later on. Looking at height from our plant mapping, we did see a significant difference when it came to height and timing of infection. Once again, you can see that in our week one release, it was significantly shorter than our not infected plants. And once again, a numerical trend from week one to week two and week three as the plant matures. This could be suggesting, and usually what we know, is that plant maturity plays a role in disease severity. Also, I wanted to add this in to shed some light on yield presented earlier and with the plant mapping we did. I did want to show our final evaluation of total number of first and second position bowls. This isn't total number of bowls per plant. This is first and second position bowls. In this graph, we didn't see much square abortion. There was no significant differences between our not infected plants and our infected plants within week one, week two, and week three. So, in conclusion, we saw a yield loss increase as the age of cotton at the time of infection decreased. So the younger the cotton, the time of the infection impacted yield. But according to the data, this was not really due to the reduction in the number of bowls, the first and second position bowls. We look forward to crawling around in these very short cages and repeat this again in 2020. I'm about the only one that can fit in these cages. It's a lot. I'm the only one that has to duck their head down. I would like to thank the people that funded this project, Cotton Incorporated and Foundation for Food and Agricultural Research, as well as all of our collaborators, and also the Jacobson Lab, who goes hard or goes home when it comes to doing the plant mapping and all that. So for this, I would like to open up for questions.
Time for one quick question.
Yes, sir. We'll definitely put that into our future directions and looking at our data. Thank you.
All right, let's get out.